Today, I would like to finish the short series that I've tried to instruct you concerning the subject of unity and fellowship. And we have looked at various aspects of unity. We've defined our topic. We've shown the spiritual nature of it that's contained in the scripture. We've shown the relationship that unity has and fellowship has to the truth. And then we have spent a great deal of time looking at the teaching of Romans chapter 14. We talked about the scope of Romans 14. And then we talked about what it means to receive one. And then last week we finished that discussion by looking at what it means to receive ye not. Today we want to tie all of this together by talking about two things that are greatly misunderstood concerning our relationship with those in whom we differ. There have been statements made over the years, and I've even heard them in this community, that state unequivocally by some that we are a group of people who just hate other religions. And we hate people who do not agree with us. And again, those are misguided statements, statements that have no merit, and statements that fail to understand the real significance of our differences and what our attitude is about those differences. I want to talk today about a subject that is very basic but very plain to understand. And we're going to talk about what it means to love and to hate. There's a great deal of misusing those terms of what it means to love something and to hate something. I want to subscribe to you this morning, before I even begin, that there is no, under no circumstance, under no scenario, can a child of God ever, ever hate another person. And under any condition, a Christian that finds himself in that category is at odds with the truth and is in jeopardy of his relationship with God. Hate has no place in our relationship with our fellow man, with our brethren, with people that we love, and with people in whom we even disagree with. Hate is not an option, never has been, never has been taught, never should be practiced. And so I want to get that out of the way before we even begin this study. No middle ground. If you love not your brother, you hate your brother. I want you to turn to 1 John 4 and listen to the words of the Apostle John, who gave no middle ground in our relationship one to another. In 1 John 4 and verse 20, it says, if someone says, I love God and hate his brother, he is a liar, for he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has seen? God said it's an impossibility to claim with your mouth that you love the God above, and yet in your heart you harbor ill will and ill feelings of hate or malice or grudge in your heart against your brother. God says, for those who try to sell that bill of goods, God labels you a liar. God says it's impossible to hate someone you can see and love someone that you cannot see. And understand that God is using this term hate in a way of ill will, of something that we have ill will about, or a heated understanding or an issue with. We also understand this same antithetical attitude is applied to the world. Now this is a great mystery to some, but we'll try to explain it in just a moment. In verse 15 it says, do not love the world or the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Now again, we are not to love the world, but that seems like an odd statement. And it seems like an odd statement because we live in the world. We're part of the world. We function in the world. We work in the world. How in the world do we not hate the world? How do we not love the world? Now, again, it's understanding the meaning of the word hate and the word love. And this is where the great problem comes in this discussion, in understanding how to define the word love and how to define the word hate. Now, what is the world that a Christian is to hate? Now, we've already been told we can't hate another person. We can't hate our enemy. We can't hate our brother. We can't hate our fellow man. We can't hate those whom we disagree with. Well, how can I do that? How can I not do that? But what is the world that the Christian is to hate? He's not to love it, so if he doesn't love it, then he has to hate it. How do we reconcile that? So you're talking about the planet? Well, you know, the tree huggers would really agree with that we hate the planet when we misuse it, when we do things that are destroying it. And so that would be a way of hating it. But I want you to tell you that God's not talking about the world. He's not talking about trees. He's not talking about birds. He's not talking about animals. He's not talking about the physical world. That's not what he's talking about. When he says love not the world, he's not talking about the planet. He's not talking about the universe. That's not the way the world's used. And I'll give you another example. In John 3:16, what did God's Son say in John 3:16? So God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. Now, is this a contradiction? Jesus said that God loved the world. John said that we're to hate the world, that we're not to love the world. Now, is this a contradiction? Is this talking about one thing and then contradicting it later on? No, both passages are true. God did love the world, and we are not to love the world. So how do we reconcile those two things? Again, it's understanding what the word love means and what the word world means in the context. Let us try to explain. What are the reasons for obeying the command which demands such a strong attitude? What are the reasons for obeying the command that we're not to love the world? That we're to hate it, that we're not to love it, we're not to become enamored with it, and we're not to show a favorite to it? What does that mean? Well, let us see if we can try to understand this. If you love the world, then you don't love the Father. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's very serious. If I love the world, then the love of the Father is not in me. But again, I want to reiterate, if we're talking about the planet, we live in it, we function in it, we work in it. How in the world can we not love it, and how can we hate something that we're part of? We're part of the world. We're part of the world. We're not going to get escape that. That's the way, that's reality. We're part of the world. You cannot love God and the world. Now, if you would have asked me, do I love living here? I do. Do I love my home? Do I love the things that God has blessed me with? Yes, I do. Well, does that put me at odds with God because I love the things that he's blessed me with? I love the home that he's provided me. I love the relationships I have. I love the job that I have. I love the ability that it gives me to take care of my family. Am I at odds with God because I love those things? No, because that's not what God's talking about. And so how do we reconcile this love and this hate relationship? Well, we know that we can't hate people because John 3:16 says God didn't. He says he loved the world so much that he gave his son. So did God give his son for the planet? No, he didn't give his son for the planet. He gave his life for the people that lived in the planet. He died for humanity. He did not die for the world. He didn't die for the globe. He didn't die for the universe. He died for those who are made in his image. He loved mankind. That's the world. He loved mankind. He did not hate. Now, does he hate the created world? No, he doesn't hate the created world. He created it. He brought it into existence. He spoke it into existence. Does God hate the world? No, he doesn't hate the world. But there is something that he hates. He hates something that exists in the world. Now, there's something that exists in the world that he hates and we have to hate. And we have to hate it with every fiber of our being. And he's not talking about the planet, and he's not talking about people. He's talking about sin. We must hate sin in every form, in every degree, in any situation, and on any plane. We cannot love sin. If we love sin, then we love the world, because that's what's in the world. That's what's represented by the world. The world is representative of sin. And sin is what separates a man from God, according to Isaiah chapter 59, verse 1 and 2. And so we are not. Now, the worldly thinking inspired by the evil one. The God of this world is what we are to hate. Now, let's read some passages that I think will help us. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And let's begin by reading verse number 4. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. Paul would write, "Whose minds the God of this world has blinded, who do not believe the light of the gospel or the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them." Whose minds the God of this world, or you have other translations, it says this age, has blinded. Who is the God of this world? Well, it's not the God that we serve. The God of this world is Satan. This is Satan's domain, the worldly domain of this world that is full of sin and sorrow. That is the domain, and that is the kingdom of darkness that belongs to Satan. And since it belongs to Satan, we can't get enamored with it. We can't fall in love with it. And we can't make it a priority in our lives, because then it damages our relationship with God. Next, look at Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2 through 5. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2 through 5. "In which you once walked, according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among also whom you also once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as others. But God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love, which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses of sin, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved." Notice, "which you once walked according to the course of the world, the power, the prince of the power of the air." Who is he talking about? He's talking about Satan. And anyone who follows the teachings and the works of the world are disciples of Satan. Remember Jesus in his conversation with the Jews in John chapter 8? And they said, "You know, you try to chastise us, but our father is Abraham." But you know, Jesus didn't agree with that. He said, "No, your father isn't Abraham." They were Jews, and they took great pride in the fact that they were fleshly descendants of Abraham. And they threw that in the Lord's face, that they were subject to no one because they were children of Abraham. And he says, "You're a liar. You're the child. Your father is the devil." Now, how in the world could he charge religious people in being the children of the devil? Why was that an accurate statement? Jesus didn't tell a lie. The Bible says God doesn't lie, Hebrews 6:18. And so when he told the Jews that they were children of the devil, that was a fact. Well, how were they children of the devil? Because they did his work. When you do the works of Satan, when you produce sin, and when you serve sin, and when you commit sin, you become a child of the devil. You are one of his children. Now, if he is the prince of the air, if he's the power of the worldly domain, then we cannot have any affection for that which belongs to Satan. We can. We've got to not do that. Now, turn over to John chapter 3. Now, this is a passage that you're probably more familiar with. John chapter 3, verse 19. Remember Jesus, he tried to help people. He tried to lead them out of their darkness. But notice what he says in verse 19. He says, and this is a condemnation. The light has come into the world, but men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. For everyone who practices evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen that they have been done in God. Now, light and darkness here represents sin and truth. Men who practice sin love darkness. They love the sin. They love the sin more than they love God. And so they live in darkness. And they're afraid of the light because the light exposes and expels darkness. What happens when you're in a dark room and you turn off a light? When you turn a light on, it illuminates and it drives out the darkness. That's what truth does. Truth drives and expels darkness. But if I want to live in the darkness, if I want to live in the sin, then I'm going to hate the light because the light is trying to get me out and show me the way out of the sin. And so again, a person that loves sin hates the light. And he's not talking about a physical light. He's talking about this. He doesn't love the truth because this exposes him for what he is. Why didn't they love Jesus? The truth that he taught exposed who they really were. The truth that Jesus taught when he was off on the earth exposed their hypocrisy, that they were not who they claimed to be. You see, that's what truth does. It expels sin. And that's why people hate it. Because they love the sin, the darkness, more than they love the light. Now, the world is a way of thinking that's opposed to God. Loving not the world is not loving the things that are opposed to God. What's opposed to God? Sin. That's what's opposed to God. That puts it in a nutshell. What could you label everything that God opposes under? Sin. Sin is why he had to die. Sin is why God had to send his son. Sin is why Jesus had to die on the cross. Sin is what separates us from God. Sin is the enemy of our soul. Sin is the thing that can cost us our soul in eternity. And so the world that we're to hate is the thinking that's opposed to God. The things that the world represents. It's all about them. It's all about what they want to do. It's all about how they want to live. We cannot get enamored with that. We have to oppose that. And we have to stay away from that. But you know what we live in, ladies and gentlemen? We live in a world that's like a magnet. And that magnet is trying to draw us in. What is the pull? What is the pull that tries to draw us into that? Sin. Sin and the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life is trying to pull us into that world. Because when we do, then we're at odds with God. You see, and so we're not talking about the literal world. We're not talking about the universe. We're not talking about the planet. We're not talking about being going green. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the things that are represented in the world. And what's represented in the world is contrary to God. And we can't love that. As a matter of fact, we have to learn to hate that. We have to despise that. We have to reject that. We have to resist that. If you love all that is in the world, then you do not love God. Now, does that mean that I can't love physical things? No. Can you appreciate physical things that God's blessed you with? Yes. But what does it mean to love those things? It means to put them in a place that's higher in priority than God is. Can you do that with the blessings of your life? Can you put them ahead of God? Can you love the things of this world more than you love God? Man, how much evidence do you want?
of people that do that every day, who put their things ahead of God. Brethren, there's a lot of people who are not sitting in any church today because they're too busy doing what they want to do. Because what's happened? They've learned to love the things of the world more than they love God. That doesn't mean, but let me give you an example. It doesn't mean that it's wrong to have a boat. It's wrong to have a camper. It's wrong to have a trailer. It's wrong to have a summer home. It's not wrong. Any of those things are not wrong. They're not wrong because they're in the world, but they're wrong if you put them ahead of God. If you get enamored with them, that those things mean more to you than God, then you have taken the bait. And you're in darkness. But you know what? Do most people that are in darkness, do they realize they're in darkness? No, they don't realize it. You know why? Because the God of this world has blinded them. Oh, yeah, okay. God wants you to enjoy those things. God gave you those things. You need to enjoy them. But you know what? If you forget everything I said this morning, I want you to remember this one point. God never blessed you with things in your life in order for them to become competition with the responsibilities and duties that you have to God. Did he? You know what that is? That's common sense, isn't it? Did God bless us with things in order to be in competition with our relationship with God? That would be counterproductive, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be counterproductive for him to bless me in ways that would put me in competition with what God wants me to do and why he put me here? That'd be contradictory, wouldn't it? But he didn't do that. See, he blessed us with those things, and then he gives us a choice how we use them, how we look at them, and how much emphasis we put on them. Does he not? You know, I know people who have been very blessed and are very wealthy. But I've seen them do great things with their wealth. I've seen them share. I've seen them do things for the Lord that they don't have to do, but they choose to do because of their love for God. And you know, many men, and rightfully so, one of the things I love about Brother Hall's prayers is he always mentions somewhere in his prayer that we own nothing. That everything we have is because God gave it to us. Now let me ask you a question. If I really believe that, if I really believe that everything I have in my life, everything I own, anything I possess, that it really doesn't belong to me, that it's only given to me by God to manage, if I really understand that concept, can those things ever come between me and God? Never could, can they? My riches and my blessings could never come in conflict with God if I truly understand that. And you know what? I believe Brother Hall and other people are right. That's the attitude that you've got to come to, or you're going to be tempted to put those things above God, and then you're going to be charged by God to that you love the world. And when you love the world, then the love of God can't dwell in you. Now that makes it pretty serious, doesn't it? That makes it very serious. Now, in the world is the focus. What's in the world? What is the focus of the world? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. You know what those three things are? They are the avenues of sin. Every sin that you and I could commit goes down one of those three roads. It's either the lust of the flesh, it's either the lust of the eyes, or it's the pride of life. It goes down one of those three roads. Every sin that you and I can commit, we go down one of those three roads. And so that's the focus of the world. The focus of the world is the lust of what I want, what I see, and all about me. That's the world's concept. And we cannot love that attitude. And if we do, then we are at odds with the God of heaven. You see, all that is in the world has to do with our attitude about things. That's what this is all about. It's about our attitude about things. It's not wrong to have things. It's not wrong to own things. It's not wrong to have many brothers. It's not wrong. But it is if your attitude's wrong about it. If I love those things, you know, here's what I'm going to explain to you. I'll explain this real simple. How much do those things cost you? If you paid for one of those things with your duty and responsibilities to God, you made a bad bargain. Because you got the thing, but you don't have God. You see, that's the danger. The danger is to understand that you could pay too much for it, because you could gain it and you could go after it in order to obtain it by shortchanging God and His duty and your responsibility to God and to His church and to His work. And you're so enamored with your own life and with your own things that you don't have any time for God. Then what you've done is you've taken the bait. And you love the world more than you love God. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? I want you to listen. I can see. And other people can see. Can people observe if a person loves the world more than they love God? Oh, yes. You can. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm the judge, because I'm not. But brethren, God can look at your life, and God can look at what we do, and God knows the answer to this question. Whether you love the God or whether you love the world. And so, let me suggest something to you. You can't have both. You can't have both, and that's what many Christians try to do. They try to love both things at the same time. Can't do it. Won't work. Even Jesus said that himself, didn't he? Turn to Matthew 6. Does that work? Did Jesus say we can love both? No. Matter of fact, Jesus said just the opposite, if I remember right. John 6:24 and Matthew 6:24. Here's what Jesus said. No one can serve two masters. He either will hate the one. Now see what he uses, hate and love here. He'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and man. He said, wait a minute. We all do that. We all live in the world and we serve God. That's true. But where is our love and where is our loyalty? You see, brethren, your love and loyalty is either with God or is with the world. You can't be with both. Can it? Can my love for the world and my love for God coexist together? Jesus said no. Jesus says either you're loyal to one and you despise the other. And what's the evidence of where you're at and where I'm at? Just by how I conduct myself with the blessings that God has blessed me with. That's the evidence of where I'm at in this discussion. Now, so the question is begged, who will be your master? God or mammon? And mammon in this context means riches. Remember what Jesus said about, remember what Jesus gave the, he was teaching on, don't put up for yourself treasure on earth where moths and rust and thieves break in and steal. Lay up for yourself treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust nor thieves break in and steal. And then he concludes by saying, for where a man's heart treasure is, there will be his heart also. And remember the disciples saying, man, that's a hard saying. Remember what he said about the rich man? He says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. You ever think about that? You ever seen a camel go through an eye of a needle? Why is it hard for a rich man to get to heaven? Because he trusts his riches more than he trusts God. And you know what mistake we make about this text? Is we think it's talking about men like J. Paul Getty. Or somebody that's a billionaire like Donald Trump, our new president. Brethren, you don't have to have Donald Trump's money, or J. Paul Getty's money, or Steve Jobs' money to be guilty of loving mammon. Because I'm telling you, there's a lot of people who violate this text that are in the middle class. You don't have to be filthy rich to love mammon more than you love God. You just have to misuse it. We must hate coveting riches. Why? Because it's a danger to our faith. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Look at verse number 9 and 10. For those who desire to be rich fall into temptation. Now notice what he says. Desire to be rich. That's their goal. That's their aim. That's what they want. To be rich, fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. Notice what he says in verse 10. For the love of money. Now notice what he says here. He didn't say money. Money's not evil. Now if money was evil, why did we take up an offering? Money's not evil. The thing that makes money evil is the word that's in front of it. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. The love of money. How do you define the love of money? How does one find themselves in the predicament of loving money? How can you be guilty of loving money? Well, it's where your priorities are at. It has to do with your priorities. Brethren, loving money doesn't mean the amount of money. We're not talking about the amount. We're talking about the prioritizing of it. We're talking about what is important in my life. What transcends and what keeps my focus? Where is it on? Is it on the earth? Is it on temporal things? Or is it on spiritual things and eternal things? It's either one or the other. It can't be both. Your primary focus is on one or two of these things. It's either on spiritual things, eternal things, or it's on temporal things, fleeting things. And wherever your focus is at, you know what that means? That means that's where your most of your attention is given. Wherever your focus is where most of your attention goes. Now, brethren, every one of us in this audience has our attention and focus in one of these two areas. On the earth, or on spiritual things. One and two. If you love God, Jesus, John said, you will keep his commandments. Now, the last thing we want to look at this morning is I want you to think about this statement. Commandments are not grievous. Because the begotten of God overcomes. What does it mean? His commands are not grievous. Turn over to 1 John 5. That'll be the last verse we look at this morning. Look at 1 John 5, verse 3. Listen to what John said. If we love God, we keep his commandments. Remember when we talked about unity and fellowship? And you remember we talked about the relationship that truth has with unity? You can't have unity without truth. And without truth, there can be no unity. You've got to have both. But look at verse 3. It says, for this is the love of God. But look at verse 2. By this we know that we love the children of God. When we love God, we keep his commandments. For this is the love of God. What is the love of God? That we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. What does that mean?
that his commands are not burdensome or grievous. Here's what that means.
Has God asked us to do anything that would hurt us? Did God ask us to do anything that would be difficult if we did it that way? No. Why? Because he loves us. He wants us to do things that will help us, that will strengthen us, that will deepen our faith, that will deepen our resolve, that will deepen our commitment. And if we follow those commandments, the byproduct is, it's going to strengthen, it's going to enhance my faith, and it's going to enhance my relationship with God. And so whatever God is, here's what I'm trying to get you to see. God has never given us a bump steer. He never has told us to do something that's going to lead us down a dangerous path. Now let me ask you an honest question today. Is there anything that you can think of that God ever told you to do that wasn't in your best interest to do it that way? No? Now, what about Satan? Has he ever told you, has he always told you things that's in your best interest to do it that way? No, he takes just the opposite. He wants you to do things to hurt yourself. He wants you to do things that hinder your relationship to God, that weaken your resolve, that weaken your faith. Why? Because he wants you with him instead of you being with God. Brethren, do not misunderstand. We'll conclude this tonight. This is a real struggle we all deal with because we all live in this world. And the world is a very strong magnet. And it can very easily draw you in very subtly, little by little, to get you to compromise your faith. To get you to try to do both. Hold on to God, hold on to the world, and love both of them equally. If you're trying to do that, you're going to lose your soul. Now, I can't make it any plainer than that. This is a real battle. We face it every day. We face it every day, Satan's trying to tilt the control to him and away from God. Because when you're more tilted towards him, you're weaker and more vulnerable to fall into sin. But when you're with God, it gets much more difficult and you get stronger and you can endure more. And so where are you at in this struggle this morning? Where's your love? Where is your affection this morning? Is it with God or is it with things? Is it in the world or is it with God? If you're here today and you're not a Christian, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to become one. Hearing the Word of God, believing that Word and repenting of your sin, confessing your faith in Christ, and being able to submit to baptism and contact the blood of Christ will put you into the family of God. It will make you one of his children. It will give you a hope of your everlasting life. It will make you a joint heir. It will put you in the household of God. And it will make you a child of God that you can address God as your father. All those are benefits that come with being a child of God. But with those benefits comes responsibility. And most of you this morning have already done that first step. You're already in his family. And then when we get in his family, we are to be faithful. Have you remained faithful? If you remain faithful, then your love is for God and your love is not for the world. But maybe you've gone astray. Maybe you tried to split your allegiance. Maybe you tried to hold on to both. And maybe you need to make some changes in your life. If you've done this in a private way, you take care of it between you and God. You don't need to let me know. You don't need to let everybody know. If you've done this and you realize you've done that and you need to change it, then you need to change it. But if you need help, if you need encouragement, you need strength, we'll pray with you and for you that God will help you and we'll try to help you. But brethren, let me tell you, this is a serious proposition. Because whatever we love the most is where we will focus the most. And whatever we love the most is what we're going to give the majority of our time to, is what we love the most. What is it that you love the most? We bid you, if we can help you, to come forward, just get a stand. Yes, we should.